so terrified that his bowels loosened and he fouled himself. Bochka, the barrel, a fat man on an equally fat horse, grinned.
He doesn't answer you, Uchitil. Look what you made him do.
No. He must be taught a lesson in manners after all. But what of these poor? Can we help them seek a road from their poverty?
The man was making a joke. The boy saw that, because many of the men were laughing. But he hadn't heard him say anything funny. He felt dimly that he ought to go and warn his father and mother about these strangers, but his feet seemed frozen to the ground. It was the lean figure of Zmiya, the snake, who answered.
There is one sure cure for the poor, Uchitl.
He reached inside his furs and drew out an oiled pistol, a 9mm Makarov PN, manufactured in the hundreds of thousands in many state factories before the long winter began. It was a compact handy automatic with a double-action trigger. The band had discovered a cache of them in a concrete bunker 7 months before, and Uchitl had insisted that every member take one. Before that, they'd had a variety of weapons. Uchitl saw the value of them all carrying the same handgun, though each still carried his own favorite rifle or machine pistol or carbine. The boy's eyes opened wider, and he began to snivel. Some of the villagers had guns, but the weapons were old and battered, mended with baling wire. He'd never seen anything like this glittering, polished pistol. The slim man tossed it upward so that the dim sun was reflected in the silver stars on each side of the cross-hatched butt. Several of the horsemen drew their guns, laughing as the lad fell to his knees. The front of his breeches was now marked with urine. He'd completely lost control. Out in the open, among the low scrub of the tundra, the cracks of the handguns sounded surprisingly flat and unmenacing. The first bullet hit the kneeling boy through the right shoulder, knocking him over. Blood gushed from his ragged clothes, staining the snow. A second shot tore through his left thigh, exiting and taking with it a chunk of muscle the size of a man's fist. Blood poured from this gaping wound.
He is still poor, Uchitl.
The man called Krisa, the rat, a tiny man with eyes as red as glowing coals, took careful aim, steadying his right hand with his left, then squeezed the trigger. The first bullet tore into the boy's chest, snapping ribs, exploding the lungs into tatters of torn tissue, sending bright arterial crimson spurting from the gaping mouth. The boy's yelping ceased, and he made a desperate attempt to escape. But the wound in his leg unbalanced him, and he fell. By falling, he put the diminutive Krisa off his aim. He had intended to shoot the dying boy again through the center of the chest, but the 9mm round smashed into the lad's face, breaking his lower jaw and tearing it away on the left so that it hung hideously lopsided, the row of jagged and broken teeth spilling out with the impact. Continuing, the lead sliced through the boy's tongue and the roof of his mouth, digging deep into the dark caverns of his brain. The boy kicked in the snow like a rabbit with a broken spine. Watching, the horsemen cheered and laughed. A couple of them made wagers on how long the poor rabbit would last. After 15 or 20 seconds, the corpse lay still, looking oddly shrunken, its blood staining the snow. Uchitl stood in the stirrups, waved a gloved fist, and shouted above the eternal wind.
He is poor no more, my brothers and sisters. Let us go now to this filthy hamlet of Ozhbarchik and help them all to escape from poverty.
Uchitl smiled, relishing their happiness. In a harsh world, it was good to give pleasure. The boy's corpse soon stopped bleeding, and the wind began to cover it with snow. But not enough to hide it from the scavengers who came creeping from secret places to rend the flesh from the bone. Uchitl knew that somewhere far to the west of them was a range of mountains, including several volcanoes, and beyond that the ruins of what had been a fine city that he once had visited. Called Yakutsk, it was near the left bank of the Lena River and had been home to over 100,000 people. Intercontinental ballistic missile bases near it had sealed its fate in 2001, and the Americans had used clean missiles against it, which slaughtered human beings but left buildings more or less intact. But the change in the climate over the next four generations had made a ruin of the city. Uchitl had been there three times, once when he was only 14, then twice in his 20s. There he had found old books and had taught himself the skills that allowed him to lead the guerrillas. He knew how the land had changed. Lakes had appeared and drained. Mountains had sunk and valleys risen. And in many places, there were new smoldering volcanoes. He sniffed the heavy, ugly smell of sulfur that hung in the air. The wind carried the pale yellow tint of the chemical, fouling the high Arctic, making breathing extremely unpleasant. Angrily, he tucked his thick scarf over his mouth and pulled down his fur cap so that only his amber eyes faced the gusting snow. The boy couldn't have been more than a few minutes' walk from his home, he judged. These groveling mutant curs in the wilderness never went farther than a mile from their houses. Rarely did you hear of anyone journeying any real distance. There might be a merchant, but to catch one alone was as rare as a day without ice. Merchants traveled in armed convoys, and there would be little to bring them this far from anything resembling civilization. In a tavern 100 miles southwest, a merchant had whispered disturbing news to Ichijul. News that the man, his greasy head to one side, his little eyes blinking with greed, had tried at first to sell.
How much for a word of a hunt?
Why should I pay for such news?
Because of who is the hunter and who is the hunted.
Sitting on his horse, waiting while the stragglers in the band crossed the trackless terrain, Uchitil smiled beneath his scarf at the memory of the plump merchant. To prompt the little man, the tall chieftain had taken his left hand in both of his, squeezing until the merchant whimpered and sweat burst from his temples. Squeezing until blood came around the sides of the purpling fingernails, and the man wept to his mother's grave for Uchitil to stop. Squeezing until Uchitil's own knuckles grew white with the effort, and the trader finally told his tale in a stammering rush of tears. And even after that, Uchicho still kept squeezing until every finger bone was cracked and splintered, one against the other. Then he pushed the crippled man to the floor among the straw and spilled wine and vomit. Urach, the doctor, reined his pony alongside Uchicho's. Urach was the only other man in the party who could read and write, but his nickname, it should have been Surgeon, came from his skill with knives.